Good morning and welcome to Making a Change for Good. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Ashwini.
So here were our assignments over the weekend. Notice how much of the conversation in your head is in support of unexamined beliefs and assumptions. Review the various statements from the voices that you jotted down. What beliefs and assumptions are revealed by that review? A belief and assumption could be revealed by a single statement or a collection of statements. Write down the beliefs and assumptions, RL, what you see. Example, the voices say, you can't talk about your sexuality with other people. Belief, it's not safe to be vulnerable. On Saturday, before a fair amount of introspection revealed something different, we believe that we are a single unified entity. I'm me. I am me. I think my thoughts and feel my feelings. Upon closer examination, we begin to notice that there is more than one I making up me. Your assignment. Review the conversation you jotted down about this issue and begin to identify the various I's having the conversation. One way to do this is to group similar statements. Find a word or phrase that describes each I. It's likely to be a quality or characteristic, RL what you see. Example, the voices. What has sexuality to do with spirituality anyway? How do I know I won't be judged? My sexuality is my business. You don't suffer over this right now. Why look? What will people think of me? Example, the eyes, private, my sexuality is my business. Skeptic, what has sexuality to do with spirituality anyway? Don't want to rock the boat. You don't suffer over this right now. Why look? Afraid, what will people think of me? And then on Sunday, our definition of a subpersonality aspect of ego is a collection of beliefs and assumptions and projections with a unique worldview and distinct language. Take each of the descriptors from the previous assignment and begin to flesh out each I such that you can recognize each as a distinct personality. Write down the language each uses, what they project onto others, the world, and you, and from that get a sense of each personality's worldview. Record and listen to what you see. As you work with this, make sure you stay on topic, confining the explorations to the specifics of what you're looking at this month. Example, Afraid's worldview, language, and projections are, people cannot find out who I really am. They won't like me if they do. I can't say what is so for me. It's not safe.
Wow. If anybody was bored right. over the weekend, they really weren't paying attention.
That's true. All right, here's our first caller. You are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, Sherry. Hello, Ashwini. Hello, Sangha. It's Brian from Detroit.
Hello, Brian. What are you seeing?
Well, a lot. It was definitely a busy weekend. yeah, I think there's a really small child inside of me that's like 4 years old and is totally hormonal and deals with sexuality in terms of just the sex act itself. And it's really interesting to watch it because it's so disconnected from reality and it tells stories. And then there's another part of me that's just like this auditor who's always going, you know, sex is bad, sensuality is bad. You know, it's all bad. It has nothing good to say about anything.
And equally like, disconnected from reality.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say. It just and when I stop and I look, I'm like, this is just a fantasy. It's just this delusional, strange place to be. And so I'm looking at how I integrate, you know, myself into sensuality in the sense of, you know, the tactile sense. The integration into real sensuality, which has more to do with sexuality to me than anything, the way the world feels instead of what I think about it.
Right. When you describe it, Brian, it's I remember going back to being a little kid and watching television, and just being so lost in whatever world was being created. And when you were describing, I thought it's like going to a movie and just being completely captivated by this, in quotes, reality that doesn't actually have anything to do with anything.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And it is like, and when I'm watching it, when the experience is watching it play out, it is like watching a movie. It's like being stuck someplace that isn't real. This movie's going on. And I think what's great, what is absolutely phenomenal about this, is that I'm really aware of the fact that that's what I would do normally, but never even notice it.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It's been going on for years, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
And regularly. And so we're looking at sexuality right now. But what you just said is so important for every piece of content in our lives. We get kind of pulled into a movie theater, and we're in there with these characters who are acting out this story, and we don't realize that that's what's going on. And then we come out of it, and because we're pulled into another same process, different content. So to step back and see it, and I would imagine in the case of sexuality, to be able to observe each one of those, the actual characters, the person who feels the bodily sensations and has those actual experiences, and then the two aspects of ego, the duality of ego that says, I want that. No, you can't have that. I want that. No, you can't have that. Or this is my experience. Well, that's bad. This is my experience. Well, that's bad.
Yeah. And it's such a, it's so amazing, you know, to sit and put your hand on a horse and realize how sexual and sensual that breathing thing is in front of you. And I'm like blown away because I see that I'm connected to that. I am connected to it, which I mean,
you are a living, breathing, physical being as well.
Yeah, and it's sensual and sexual, this weekend was crazy because I'm like, yeah, everything's bisexual, and I'm like, well, normally I wouldn't say that because there's too many there's too much fear connected with uh-huh. the idea that, but it's true. I mean, it's just true.
We have to be so carefully taught what to respond to and what not to respond to.
Yeah, I'm starting to figure that out.
That's my fascination with why it's so important to teach people what's natural.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Yeah, because you would think, I mean, I think if we weren't introduced to all of the alternatives, probably we'd be very attracted to fruits and vegetables, right?
Exactly.
But because somebody gives us French fries and chocolate, there we are.
The new standard. So, well, anyway, great topic and a great, I love, thank you, Sangha, so much for everybody sharing on the levels that they're sharing on. I really appreciate that. I really do.
Yeah, me too. Thanks, Brian. Thanks so much.
Take care.
All right. Go happy.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Brian. Sherry, I dropped off the call, so I just sat on. Next call.
Yeah, you're a little underwater even as you speak, Ashwini. So, yeah.
Next, so you're now live, huh? Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Ashwini. Hi, Sherry. This is Kim calling from Vashon.
Hello, Kim. What are you seeing?
Oh, well, I'm seeing a lot of double reverse projection kind of as an umbrella where for me personally, it's like that person in particular, my partner, doesn't think I'm sexy, you know, is having all these feelings about me, but it's really, it's me projecting onto him what he thinks about me.
Well, now that's a very helpful process to catch on to, isn't it?
It sure is, and it happens in society, too, because, you know, I have kind of an unusual body, and so I think well, they think that that's not sexy, you know, I'm not sexy because they think that, but really I'm seeing that this is me, you know, these are all my projections that I have put out there for so long.
And believe them, it sounds like.
And I have believed them.
Just to be clear, Kim, before you go on, just to be clear, you hear a voice in your head saying these things, and you believe it. Right? I'm just differentiating so that it's not I think this about myself. Okay?
Yeah.
I may now, after enough years of being told, I may be more identified with the one who believes it. But that's not the same as I'm doing it to myself.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the other thing that's going on for me is the whole culture of the whole Me Too culture has, I'm not exactly sure how to work with that in our work, because I find that there is one personality that I call the Me Too woman who's very angry about how women have been treated.
Uh-huh. And you put that in the past. I think you could bring it right on into the present tense, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And so, you know, she's really angry. The Me Too woman is angry. She's disgusted by how women are treated. She is hateful of, you know, the perpetrators. She doesn't want to have anything to do with being sexual because that's how, you know, the women have been subjugated, how women are subjugated. And so I'm seeing her with, you know, compassion, and I'm not exactly sure where to go with that.
Well, and what I saw, Kim, when you said that is there's another diabolical aspect. So women are turned into sexual objects and judged and, you know, back to the horses, right? Kind of the equivalent of horse flesh, and which one is desirable and which one isn't and for how long, and that whole process. And then if that gets turned into a rejection of one's own sexuality, that's the next layer of suffering, right? So the Me Too woman obviously has experienced that kind of objectivization and is upset about it, and then would give up her own sexuality rather than being clear about what is so for her, right? That she can be a sexual being regardless of what anybody else is projecting onto her or thinks or does or anything else.
Yes, I agree, and I guess I get stuck in the anger, ego.
Well,
we
have a thing for that, Kim, as you know, because it wouldn't matter if she was. So I was reading an article this morning about a pesticide that's widely used in this country that winds up in the fruits and vegetables that go into kids' lunches that has been proved to destroy the brains of developing brains. Okay, I go to this place of what is wrong with us as humans? I know that the answer is nothing. However, so I could be angry about that. You could be angry about what men have done to women. Somebody else can be angry about discrimination and prejudice. Somebody else could, you know. So the process that we use to deal with that, of course, is a two-handed recording. Because we want everybody to be able to have their experience, but not be stuck in it, right? Which is the whole point. Because then, if you identify with her, you've now entered the problem phase of the situation, right? So now you're going to hate all men and hate your society and hate, and that's not the point either. So to let her have and express her feelings. Without dragging everybody into that perspective.
That is excellent. And there's one more little edge to it, which is that I end up having self-hate because I have tolerated behavior that has encouraged men. You know, I have not shut that off. So then it turns inward also.
Yes. Well, and of course, that's garden variety self-hatred, right?
Exactly.
So that's what happened. Yeah, that's what happened before you caught on to all of this. Okay, now it's a new day, which is why I always think, well, anyway, it's kind of political, but the Me Too movement should start right now. We cannot, you know, I smoked in the car with my daughter and neither of us wore seatbelts, okay? That was the society we lived in then. If a voice wants to beat me up for that, it's just out of luck because if I had known better, but I didn't, and you didn't.
Yeah.
Now you do.
Right.
Now you do. Now you can be there to take care of yourself and make conscious choices and like that. So just say no to that one, okay?
All right.
All right. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you so much. Thank you both. Thank you both. Thank you to Sangha, too. Go happy.
Okay, go happy.
Thanks, Kim. Can you hear me, Sherry?
Yes, I can hear you, and you sounded perfectly, well, almost perfectly clear then. It's that you get that underwater thing sometimes, but you sound good now.
Okay. Well, what I wanted to say about that conversation is really just the process tool we have in the exercise that we're doing, which is to jot down all the voices, then group the voices, and then articulate the I that has that voice. Because what it does is clarifies where we're caught, right? Because oftentimes they all have competing voices, and they have worldviews, and when we're identified with them, we act out of those worldviews. And so just to be able to, with the clarity that Kim offered, to really compartmentalize all of these eyes and their worldviews sorts out many things for us, or assists us, for example, to say, okay, I need to practice with this angry person on the two-handed recording exercise. If we don't identify with any of them, we really understand the mix of sensations and feelings and self-hate and conflict and everything that we experience around a particular issue, which is the source of the suffering. We don't have to do anything. We just have to become aware of the players, and then we know the movie we're in, right?
That's right. Yeah, well, and what you're describing with this, I think, is that we move into a place of conscious awareness, we could add conscious compassionate awareness that can sympathize with everybody's point of view. All kinds of things happen to everybody. All right. And so that can be embraced in compassion. And that's what frees us, right? We don't need to act it out for the rest of our lives once we realize it's an aspect of ego that we get stuck in.
Right. And so I don't have to deny my sexuality because I'm identified with the Me Too person, nor do I have to accept the projection that is being leveled by the person who believes that she's not sexy, right? There's a way in which identifying all of those players assists us to be appropriate to the moment, which is the whole point of doing the process.
Yes. And what you're describing is, so I'm present, right? All of those things are going on, and I'm aware of it, just like I can be aware of whatever else anybody else is doing around me. But I'm present, right? Which is how we're able to choose appropriately.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is that all right? Did I get that right?
Yes. And exit the suffering place, because it's only as long as I'm identified with any and all of those people and moving between them that there is confusion or hurt or all of those emotions or the identification that separates. Because otherwise, it's just all acceptable.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I'm right there with you.
Yeah. That's very fun. Here's our next caller. You're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, good morning, Sherry and Ashwini. It's Todd calling from British Columbia.
Hey, Todd.
Hey. I, yeah, it was a busy weekend. I saw a lot. what I identified is it seems to be the prominent subpersonality is the teenager. Yeah, wow. And I have, I'm living on a property with two young teenagers in another family, and I have great more compassion and empathy for them now. And I'm identifying how I was as a teenager.
Oh, yeah.
And
awful.
Oh, it is. The hormones, and they're dating right now, and they're going to parties, and everything is dominated by girls, which I was as a teenager. It was that was my whole life for decades after I saw how
You're
much you know into you know I couldn't have an interaction with a woman that I was it, just seeing this in hindsight. I was constantly sexualizing her, any woman, any situation, and it was just dominating the whole interaction.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. It kind of the poem at the beginning, right?
Yeah.
Sitting on that bar stool way past time when you want to, just because there's that person there that you want to touch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how many thousands of hours I spent in bars and nightclubs doing exactly that.
Mm-hmm.
In my youth and in my recently, but what I really noticed is what I've noticed in the last, I don't know what, there's two things that I really was prominent over this weekend looking at the assignments was, one, I don't have that objectification or sexualization of women when I'm interacting with them anymore. That has dropped away. I don't know how or why, but I don't act out of that anymore. I just have this non-sexual interaction, which was very prominent before, and I found that very, very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But secondly, I'm not in an intimate or sexual relationship with another person right now, but then I saw that there's this teenager that I get identified with, and I have then I have these urges, and then I get really identified, and then I go on the internet and I watch pornography, and then I have masturbation, and it's interesting to look at that. I get really taken over by that young person who still wants to be sexually active.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
So I found that interesting. That it's kind of internalized now as opposed to being externalized, like seeking it externally.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and of course, you know, you've pointed out one of the great differences in our modern society, and that is that everything is available in the home, right?
Yes.
You don't have to skulk off to some dark place to watch pornography, right there on
dark
your computer.
Theater. Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And or your TV or however it comes.
However you stream
home.
It.
Right. And right. Exactly. And so, So all of this that used to be very difficult to accomplish is now really simple to accomplish. In fact, if you decided against pornography and decided for an actual woman, you could order one.
Yes.
Right? You could
absolutely.
Order one up. Yeah.
And, online. You could order it and they'd deliver it at your door. Yeah.
Yeah.
They come right to your house. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And so watching that that teenager, and I would guess, Todd, that a lot of it is hormonal, right? That there are times when that's really, those hormones are really up. And just like when we're teenagers, they just take over. You know, we're just helpless in there.
We're unconscious. Yeah,
go unconscious. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really interesting. The hormone does something to the brain, right? It just makes it unconscious.
Yeah.
And then we act out, and of course, act out of that, and then we're left. You know, all of that passes away, and then we're left in the aftermath of it.
Yeah.
And of course, that's where. Self-hate wants to come in and have opinions about us and tell us how we should be different.
Yeah.
So.
There's one little further aspect that I've been using as a koan for a long time, and it really came up again with these assignments this weekend. Is I think I heard you say, I think it was that group at the monastery, but I don't quote me on this because you never know what we hear. that masturbating is a poor person's high. Is that Does that ring a bell?
Well,
at all?
I'm curious what that's pointing at. I think the real quote is that orgasm. Is a poor man's enlightenment.
Ah, okay.
And I think what it's pointing at is that in the moment of orgasm, the ego falls away.
Aha. Uh-huh. Wow, yeah. That's big. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So yeah. Maybe there's that, maybe that in that extreme rush of, I guess, hormones and endorphins and emotion and sensation, what you're saying is maybe there's a heightened presence?
Well,
no?
Not necessarily.
Yeah?
Not necessarily. It's I would, when I was just describing it, I would equate it to a rage. You know, when a person gets so angry, they're just shaking all over,
yes.
And they're consumed by
yeah.
that anger, and then
yeah.
something breaks it.
Yeah.
And in that moment, all of it falls away. I mean, it may just
uh-huh.
be for a split second. All of it falls away. And then here comes
uh-huh.
conditioning ego to have opinions about it.
Right.
But
exactly.
that level of anger can
yeah.
be very much like any extreme emotion can be
mm-hmm.
very much a very similar process.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's something to look at even further. So there's
yeah.
What I'm getting from that too is, and I think you said more about it in group, but I can't remember it. But what I took away from it was that there's no right or wrong or feeling bad about it or no self-hate about it. It's just I think like what I'm looking at is self-pleasuring. Then if pursued egotistically, is not. I don't think that's in a direction of encouragement. Does that make any sense?
Well, yes. To me, it's like everything else.
Okay.
It's something to explore.
Yeah, right.
And the self-hatred
uh-huh.
is usually there to stop the exploration.
Yeah.
So the same voices that would beat you up after masturbating would
okay.
talk you into it.
Yes, thank
and
you.
And so that's true with overeating. It's true with taking
yeah.
drugs or smoking
yeah.
cigarettes or drinking alcohol or spending money or, you know, whatever it is,
okay.
the same process talks us into and then beats us up for. And it's
yeah.
that process that we're trying to see through.
Right.
Because that's how the illusion of being separate from life is maintaining itself.
Yes. Yeah.
So if we let go, this is back to, you know, if I'm good because I'm afraid not to be, I'm not really good, I'm just afraid.
Yeah.
That's that same process. If I'm afraid to explore any
yeah.
aspect of what's going on with this, then what I'm choosing is to be doomed to that fearful relationship in which ego is controlling me.
Yeah, great. Well, I appreciate mm-hmm. that clarification. That was very helpful. Excellent.
Oh, good.
Good.
All
thank
right.
you so much.
Well, thank you
all
for
right.
that, Todd. That was.
Thanks,
great.
Sherry. Thank you, Ashwini.
Yeah.
Thank you, Sangha. I really appreciate it. These calls are so supportive.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Take good care.
I will. Thank you. Goodbye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Todd. You know, Sherry, it goes back to that, what is natural.
If yes.
It's the larger perspective that everything in life is life. And what
mm-hmm.
we're just exploring is what keeps it out of that. Realm of
mm-hmm.
unconditional acceptance.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, there's a way in which if we don't suffer, if there's no suffering around it, we don't have to look in some senses because it's in life. It's all of these places where we're not allowed to look and the
yeah.
suffer that we really need to be looking. Not from the
yeah.
place of changing it, but just simply bringing it into conscious awareness.
Yes, and the not suffering is not the same one that was pointed at, you know, well, I'm not suffering over this now because the whole thing is being so repressed that I never look at it.
That's right, exactly.
That's not
yeah.
what we're talking about either. Yeah.
Yeah. As soon as I know I don't want to look at it, I know that
I need to
if I hear a voice, exactly, if I hear a voice,
Yeah. I want to make one other point before we hear our next assignment. I know we're at time, but, you know, this is a unique time in human history in that everything, let's just talk about this culture, but I think it's true of cultures around the world. Everything is sexual. Sex, you know, nude or semi-nude women are used to sell everything. Everything. And so we are just inundated with nudity and sexuality in all of its forms and perversions. It's just the world we live in. And then we are supposed to maintain these moralistic standards about how we behave. And I think it's insane, personally. So just for people to consider that as we're looking at this.
Mm. And what I hear you saying that, right, Carrie, is it's exactly what you were telling Todd. The voices talk us into it, and then voices
yes.
beat us over it. And so the moralistic
yes.
standard is what we get beaten over, but the persuasion
yes.
is it, the temptation and the seduction is everywhere, anyway, talking us into it. So that the dynamic
yes.
of self-hate gets maintained.
Yes, yes, exactly. Beautifully stated. That is exactly it. Yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. Our assignment for today, draw portraits of the aspects of ego you've seen. Jot down what each says. Record and listen.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Ashwini. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Take care.
So happy. Mañana.